Spring of 1944, my family was sent to Auschwitz. When the selection came up, of course, this was totally, we had absolutely no idea where Auschwitz is, what a death camp is. My family sent there from the eastern part of Hungary, that used to be Czechoslovakia. They're separating men and boys from about mid-teens on one column of five rows all the time, women and children on the other side. I'm next to my father. I'm 16 years old. He is in his early 50s. As we get up to the front where the selections take part, we don't know what's going on. We're in total shock. SS officer just points to my father, go to the left, points to me, go to the right. I figure my father and I will meet up, whatever. I never see him again. I don't know what this place is. So I'm sent to the right, order comes, take off all your clothing. Standing there, order comes, single file, everything, double time. First stop, they cut off all your hair. Second stop, you go in a gauntlet of prisoners, blue and white stripes, as you see in documentaries. They have some chemicals in their pump action, and they spray you all over your body. Then you go into a barracks. This is just showers all over the place. Cold water comes out. Everybody's standing with their mouth open because our journey from Eastern Hungary to this godforsaken place, which turned out to be Auschwitz, the first day the water was gone. There was just one drum of water in there. And so we are dying of thirst and famished because we didn't have any food. So soaking wet, we are running to the next barracks where we see the same blue and white striped uniforms in piles. You choose a jacket, pair of pants, a cap, wooden shoes. Then you go to a bin, get a soup dish, a cup, and a spoon. And this is now your worldly belongings. Then you go to the end of the barracks. And SS guards have long tables set up with the alphabet on the wall. You have to go where your last name is. So I go to K, and I'm fluent in German because I took German and Italian in my studies in gymnasium. And he says to me, "Wie heißen Sie?" which means, "What is your name?" And I tell him my Hungarian name is Klein Gabor. He looks at the sheet of the new arrivals of Jews from eastern part of Hungary, my hometown of Beregszász. He finds my name. And then I noticed that next to my name is a blank space. And he looks at my chest. I didn't realize by looking down that I was color-coded, first of all. There was a little white piece of cotton hand-sewn there. You see an upside-down yellow triangle, which denotes that I'm a Jew. I didn't know about this until I found out a lot later. And so he puts it down. Now my last thing is taken away, my name. I'm a number now. I'm at the mercy of the SS. They can do whatever they want me to be. I don't know this, but this is basically what's happening to me. Then they are taking us to a big area in this huge, huge camp. All you see is barbed wire and huge barracks. And I notice signs as we are being marched out of there to one section of this place in German that says, "Achtung, attention, electrified fence. If you touch it, you're dead." I'm telling my 16-year-old brain, these people are trying to kill me. This is upon my arrival, you know. And finally, some food comes, which smells terrible and tastes terrible, but I gobble it down because I'm famished. Piece of bread that sort of looks like bread but tastes like sawdust. Eat it again. And I'm waiting for my father, who, of course, never arrives. So I'm now with prisoners from other countries that the Nazis overran before the Hungarian Jews were sent to their death in this place. And I said, I didn't speak Polish, but he spoke German and so did I. I asked him, "Could you tell me how come my father went to the left and I was sent to the right?" And he says, "Come with me." And he takes me outside and points in the distance a tall brick chimney spewing smoke and flames and everything else. And he says to me, "Your father is going up in the smoke." I can't translate this message. I was with my father, you know, an hour or two ago, and he's going up the chimney. And then he tells me, this is where you are. This is Auschwitz-Birkenau. This is the biggest killing machine on the face of the earth. Eventually, 1.1 million human beings, not just Jews, but anybody who is sent here, will be murdered, from babies to grandparents. And, you know, I just can't imagine. I have absolutely no idea what happened to my mother and two sisters. And it's no sense for me to wait for my father, because he just told me if he went to the left, he was going to the nearest gas chamber. Never heard of a gas chamber. Then the crematorium. Never heard of a crematorium. You know, and I'm in this situation with 430,000 Hungarian Jews were sent to this one camp to be killed. The bottom line in Auschwitz is 80% of the people who were sent from Hungary, Jews, would be killed upon arrival in the gas chambers. Other 20% will be sent to slave labor camps all over Nazi-occupied areas and will be killed through slave labor. So the bottom line is, we're going to kill you one way or another. Okay. I see people dying all around me. They're dying of hunger. They're dying of diseases, accidents on the work site, real hard labor. They're going to kill you. And I'm now a prisoner here in Wolfsburg, and about 7-8 months. And one morning, we're standing in attention. SS sergeant stops like 5 feet in front of me, looks around the front. The young prisoners are always in the front rows. Anybody speaks fluent German? Put my hand up. How? I mean, they're killing me in the slave labor, you know, work sites. What can be, you know, worse than what I'm doing already? Plus, why should they pick on one person? If they want to kill 200 today, they can do it. Why should they pick on one person? So I take a chance. Take my hand up. He takes me outside the camp. There's a civilian person. He dismisses the sergeant. I'm standing in attention, take off my hat, tell him my prison number, and he says to me, I am Mr. So-and-so. He introduces himself, and I couldn't understand why. You know, he is a German. I'm at his mercy, but he told me his name, which was really odd. And he says that I am a civilian engineer. For the next 2 weeks, I'm going to survey the road that has to be built or whatever. And I need somebody to help me with my equipment. With that, he gives me this wooden board that has the numbers on it. He has his tripod with his equipment, a notebook, and we walk away from the camp. This is the first time in 7 or 8 months that I was not with hundreds or thousands of other human beings constantly, 24/7, prisoners. All of a sudden, I'm looking around. I'm seeing beautiful forest, and I'm with just one human being. The silence is so wonderful, because I've been all these months with screams and yells and dying and everything and praying, and I'm with another human being. He walks away from me, says, stand over here, face me with the board, with the numbers. He writes some notes in his notebook, and then he beckons me to go with him. Great. Next morning, the first thing he says to me, I see what terrible situation you people are in. Now, my brain, the way it works, is he trying to rub this in? Is he a wise guy or something that would do something like that? But that's not it. What he says is this: I'm going to bring you back to meet up with your work party to march back to the camp, because you have to be counted a half hour early. And I'm quoting him. When I'm pointing to my left, you'll see a barracks. This is where the SS guards and civilian engineers have their lunch. This is way past lunchtime. Don't worry about it. And I'm quoting him. He says to me, I'm going to stay outside, go inside, go as far as the kitchen is, look under the table of the very first table next to the kitchen, under the bench. I go there, a piece of paper napkin has a piece of chicken, a piece of real bread that I haven't seen all these months, piece of cheese, and a little cup of milk. I drink the milk because I can't carry it, but I put the rest in my pocket because I want to share it with a couple of young prisoners that I made friends with, because for moral support, we had to find somebody, and the young prisoners were more optimistic than the older ones. The older ones had a chance to just give up, which was very easy, and you die really fast once you give up, you know. So I come out, and I thank him, and I'm fluent in German, so I can really tell him what a wonderful thing he was doing. And I credit this human being with saving my life. He is a German, he is a Christian, yet he took this chance, because if he would have been seen giving me food, he could have wound up in the same camp, because the SS would not put up with that kind of stuff. Very strict rules. He saved my life because not only that I was able to replenish my physical self to continue, but mentally it was such a fantastic thing knowing that my enemy supposedly helped me out. And this thing kept me going. And if there's one human being on the face of the earth that I would like to have found after the war, it would have been him. It's just, as we call it, either in German or in Yiddish, which is the language of the Jews, he was a real mensch, which is a real human being. So basically, this is one little part of my horror story of exactly a year, because my family was sent to Auschwitz in the spring of very early May of 1944, and I was liberated by the Russians in spring of 1945. Now, all this time, I had no idea. I know my father was killed, but all this time, I have no idea what happened to my mother and two sisters. And about 6 months into my imprisonment, this was also in Wolfsburg, because that's where I was sent, from Auschwitz, I got to the point that I'm not going to make it. And I told myself, unless you come up with something in your brain to keep you going, you're not going to make it. And I came up with two things. I told myself, my mother and two sisters are alive. They're going to get home. And how terrible it would be for them, the father and the only son in the family does not return. I got to keep alive just as much for myself as for them. And the other thing was, if the SS kills me, they win. If I stay alive, I win. Every night when I exhausted, went to sleep, I told myself these two things. Every morning when I woke up, same thing, through the rest of my imprisonment. Then we were sent from Wolfsburg to a real concentration camp. There's no more work, just dying. I mean, unbelievable amount of people are dying. Made friends with two Polish kids about my age. About 2 months later, we come out of the barracks. First thing we notice, no SS guards in machine gun towers. Now, this could be good news or bad news. Good news could be that because we have been hearing for the past month cannon fires, planes flying over, knew something was happening, that maybe they took off because some of the guards had their families in little bungalows close to the railroad station. Or the bad news is, the reason they are not up there because they're all collecting at the gate of the camp. They're going to come in here and kill every one of us because they don't want to have any witnesses to this horror that they created. Well, the three of us are sneaking through the barracks until they can get a real clear view of the gate. Nobody there. So we get up the nerve thinking this must be good news because they're not there. So there's a heavy chain on the gate with a big padlock. And it's a very foggy morning, and we're just standing there looking out. And all of a sudden, there is like a break in the fog. and all you see is two horses, one horseman on one of the horses, and they are, you know, look like 3 inches tall. As they come closer and closer, all of a sudden, one of my Polish friends says, look at his hat. It's a red star. Immediately, I recognize this is a Russian soldier. And I must have told myself, I made it. We are standing there. He gets to the gate, takes out his gun, shoots out the padlock. He says, nobody can leave the camp because you have all sorts of diseases, full of lice and everything. Russian army knows exactly where, not just the concentration camps and slave labor camps, but the prisoner of war camps for Russian soldiers are. There will be medicine, doctors, and food coming. So the three of us, and as fast as our skinny legs would carry us, running all over the camp, opening doors in as many languages as we knew, we scream and yell, we are free, we are free. And free, of course, those who have a little strength come out of the barracks. Those who can't are crawling out. Of course, a large percentage are either dying or dead. And sure enough, all of a sudden, trucks come and set up tables. Russian officers, doctors in white coats, then boxes of medication close to them. And then a terrible thing happens. In my eyes, trucks come in with open trucks with food comes into the camp, and prisoners who think that food is going to make them live just grab a handful of food and puts in their mouth, and they eat it, and they die. Their systems are so broken down that they just can't handle real food. You know, all you've been getting is watery soup and some sawdust-tasting bread all this time. So it's really terrible. But now they have the table set up. I go to the Russian doctor who happens to speak German. He tells me you have a high temperature, you have typhoid fever. Here is your prescription. They send me to the other table. They fill the prescription for me. They said, get on those buses. They're going to take you to the nearest hospital. I get my medication, but I'm not going to go on the bus. I'm walking towards it, but I want to go to the train station. I know where the trains are going and coming because I hear the train whistles. And this is right next to the place of the bungalows where the SS families with their SS guard husbands, were staying. They're gone. I go into one of the bungalows. I say goodbye to my two Polish friends because they were going in a different direction. Open the cupboard, food, closet, clothing. I go into the bathroom, turn on the water, hot water. I tear off my raggedy prison uniform that I had on now for a year, which is full of lice. I see shampoo and soap and hot water. I take my first hot shower in a year. I dry myself with fluffy towels. I go to the closet, find myself something to wear. I didn't care that it was civilian clothing because all you had to, I didn't have to worry that they won't recognize me as a survivor of these camps. All you had to do is look at my face and my eyes, knowing that I went through this horror. And then I put some food from the cupboard in my pocket and I'm going out to the station. Every train that comes is full of Russian soldiers coming the wrong way. They're coming this way, I gotta go that way. Finally, here comes a train. Same kind of cattle car train that took my family to Auschwitz. Doors are open. They are survivors from concentration camps and slave labor camps. And Russian soldiers are heading home. So, but the door is open. And we were told before we left the camp, no matter what direction go home in areas that has been liberated, there will be always, any station will have doctors, they'll have medicine, and they'll have food. I got hungry, I get up. You have to understand the war is still going on. These trains are not running. I figured out that my journey home should have taken me maybe 8 hours. It took me several days because stop and go, stop and go, stop. So I would figure I was about halfway home when somebody taps me on my shoulder. I turn around, here's a woman prisoner from the concentration camp, a young woman, blue and white striped dress with a little scarf of the same material on her head. And she says, aren't you Klein Gobbi? That's my Hungarian name. She recognized me. I don't know how, but she said, I said to her, yes, I am. And she said, I got good news for you. I was with your mother and two sisters in the Nazi ammunition factory, and we were liberated, I'm quoting her, we were liberated by the American army. Just want to let you know, they are fine, except your mother, being her late 40s, really had some health problems, so they wanted to make sure that she will be strong enough to, until she has her strength back, before they start home. And in a couple of weeks, they should be home. Well, this is, of course, the best news I can ever have. Not only at that moment, I must have patted myself on the shoulder saying, you were so smart thinking of this thing about that they are going to come home and you got to come home also. You know, an interesting thing was I met my future brother-in-law who married my older sister, Lily. And on a daily basis, we were going out to the station waiting for them. Finally, they arrived, and there was a moment where we looked at each other, especially them looking at me. They were so sure that my father, who was a muscular young man in his early 50s, would survive and I, as a skinny teenager, would perish. That was a moment like, it's you, you know. And I had the sad job of telling them that our father was killed in Auschwitz upon arrival.